Welcome to the Sean Chandler Podcast, a place to talk movies and nerd culture way too much. Joining me, as always, is Griffin. Griffin, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing pretty good, man. Not too much to complain about or really talk about, because nothing's really changed in the world over the past couple months, so... It's the same old thing, man.
Every day is exactly... Hey, what have you been up to? Staying home, watching TV, and hearing movie news about more things that have been delayed. So,
yeah.
Like, it really does feel like every day is kind of the same. Even here in Texas, like, we should be getting into spring. It should be getting hot outside. But for some reason, we've had this delayed rainy season, which actually might play into this podcast at some point in time, because it was, like, pouring rain 5 minutes ago, and there's like, I saw lightning right out this window, so my power could cut out at any point in time in the middle of this. But like, even because of that, it doesn't feel like the seasons are changing at all. We're just like stuck in this perpetual bizarre moment in human history where we can't leave our houses. Fun times.
I know, it's great. I mean, it's been overcast for a good bit here. It's like just now starting to warm up, and I think like it'll hit the 90s in the latter half of this week, which, you know, I might be able to actually utilize the pool here. So that might make things a little better. I have no idea, but, you know, it's just same old, same old.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah, for us, we have a neighborhood pool that they have a big, gigantic sign in front of it saying, don't come in. And there's like a chain around it and everything. We went for a little walk and walked up to it. I was like, this is dramatic. This is a little bit over the top what you're doing right here. But I guess there's no shortage of dumb people out there, so it probably makes a little bit of sense to do all of that. All right, so for today's show, we've got a bunch of subjects to cover. A lot of it, once again, about movies being delayed, things being canceled, some interesting kind of stuff, and I'll just kind of give you the rundown real quick. We got some updates on Venom. It's been delayed, and we have a title. Scoob is going straight to VOD. Comic-Con, San Diego Comic-Con, is officially canceled. We have a whole new set of DCEU movie dates. Justice League Dark is heading to HBO Max from Bad Robot and J.J. Abrams. Lovebirds finally has a date, release date. You have seen Extraction, so you're going to tell us about it. And Georgia is thinking about reopening their movie theaters. And so that'll be a fun discussion about why and what are they going to show. So
yeah, it'll be a great discussion about how not to run a state.
Very, very bizarre decisions that some people make. Anyway, if you guys are listening to the audio version of this, be sure to leave a review and a rating on wherever you listen to podcasts. It does help us out in these early phases, this first kind of first 21s, trying to get momentum for the podcast as we're kicking things off. It would be appreciated. But also, so you know, this is being recorded live straight to YouTube. So I will be taking some feedback from people in the comment section as we go through this. And for those of you watching live at the end of this, once we close off the audio version with our main topics, we will do some Q&A. So if you've got a bunch of questions unrelated to our subjects at hand, just hold them to the back end and we will take a whole bunch of your questions there at the end. And one final disclaimer before we get started talking about our Venom news is that YouTube changed up their settings and stuff. So if you send in a super chat, I might miss it. There's some ways that I used to track that to make sure I didn't miss anything, and they changed things up, and so I don't know how to find those anymore as easily. So there's a chance I'll miss things. I'm very sorry if that does happen. And let's get started. So I believe it was yesterday we got both the announcement that Venom is being delayed and that we have the title for it. Was Bring On the Carnage.
Let There Be Carnage. Let There Be Carnage.
Of all the titles, I think it acknowledges their own self-awareness that things are, they have an awareness of their place in the world of comic book movies. But so let's talk first about the fact that the delay happened. So some people are surprised by this because they're like, wait, won't movie theaters be opened back up by October? Like, I don't understand. Why would you push the movie? Are you really thinking we're not going to have movies for that long? And I don't think that's exactly what this is. What I've been saying on these podcasts for weeks is that there's just going to be a massive reshuffle of everything. Just everything's going to reshuffle because theaters are closed right now. Production on new movies that are coming next year has been shut down, and you can't go into the studio to finish the movies that are working. So that's a lot of moving pieces, a lot of things shuffling, moving around that are going to cause a lot of problems for people. And because of that, I'm just not surprised if anything moves. It's not the October date that's the problem. It's all the other stuff, the trickle down. They're probably going to have trouble finishing the movie because this was a quick turnaround. This was a 2-year turnaround for a blockbuster. That's fast. So right off the bat, they always were kind of running against the clock on that. But then you add to that, everything shutting down. That's a problem. And if you're a studio and you're trying to move around release dates for the movies that were supposed to come out during summertime, it makes a little bit of sense. Let's just push everything down the road. Let's reshuffle everything for what's best in light of all the information that we have. What do you think about the delay? Did it surprise you at all?
Yeah, it does and it doesn't. Weirdly enough, I think I'm going to be on the opposite side of this of you. I don't think it's that they'll be able to – I don't think it's that they won't finish the film in time, like the post-production thing, because like they've been finished principal photography for a while. And like while there's like effects in the movie, it's like – it's pretty moderate when you compare it to like other, you know, superhero films. I mean, obviously they'll probably try and do it better in the sequel than they did in the original film, but I mean, still, I think that they're moving it because, so the Batman moved out of its June slot, which is a story we're going to get to a little bit later on, but like, so the Batman moved out of a primetime June slot next year to October 1st or October, whatever of next year. And so I think because the back half of this year is really just stuffed, overstuffed, full of content. Sony wants to maximize their profits and they want to release Venom in order for it to hit that $1 billion mark.
Yeah.
The original film made, I believe, over like $800 million, which is just absurd given the film it is. But,
a big budget. Like, that's a great number for the actual budget of that film. This was not one of these $250 million comic book movies, like $100 million. So hitting that $800 million, that close to getting the $1 billion club, you know, there's studio executives that are just in love with Venom.
Yeah, no, I mean, clearly. And I think that them moving it to June, it offers Venom a better chance to succeed because it's not crowded by everything. I mean, obviously, it's got the summer slate that it has to worry about, but like it's also Venom. And so it can kind of hold its own in that space. The other thing is, obviously, production on Spider-Man 3 is going to be majorly delayed. Like, it's not going to come out next year. That's just not going to happen. And so with that film now pushed out of its June or July release slot, like, they don't have to worry about competing with themselves there. And so, like, having Venom open in June gives it a really, like, long stretch of time to earn a lot of money because people are going to go see it during the summer. So I think it's more of a strategic move in order to maximize profits than it is a move in terms of not finishing the film. Because, like, even during lockdown, like, productions are still, like, you know, doing stuff. They're still editing and working on effects and whatnot. So I think that's where I kind of land on that.
To clarify, I'm not specifically locking in on one theory. My whole thought is there's so many moving parts to all of this. Every studio is just reshuffling for all the reasons you just said of, like, okay, this movie was affected for this reason. That opened this up. Therefore, we should. It's all of that stuff. It's the full so many pieces are moving. So everyone is recalculating, trying to figure out how do I maximize this? And so, saw some people being like, you know, why would they move this to this date? And I don't understand. It was everyone is thinking, how do we make the most money in this situation? How are we successful with all of this? Everyone is doing that about every single movie. And that's the scoop conversation. That's everything.
Yeah.
There's so much new information, so many moving parts. And they're trying to do the best with a really bad situation.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, like, they've already, like, moved basically every single film that they were going to have come out this year has been moved to next year. So it's like they're basically they're calling 2020 a wash for them. Like, they're just like, you know, we'll just give up and try again next year, which is weird because they're moving like a Kevin Hart movie into October or September or something like that. And it's just like, all right, I guess now the fall is sort of like the dumping grounds for if you don't think a movie's going to make a lot of money, just throw it there, see what happens. Just real quickly, I will say that the title, while it's terrible, you're right, it does have that like hint of self-awareness. So like, yeah, but also you can be self-aware and not have bad titles. So like, I just, Let There Be Carnage, it's just bad. It's just a bad name. And
so someone asked the question, Crazy Cousin says, who do you think is going to be the villain in Venom 2? The title, I think, says it all. Let There Be Carnage. Carnage is the villain in this film. And, you know, I think naturally everyone would think that's a pretty obvious follow-up given the post-credit scene of the previous film. How do you escalate things? Right. But the title, Let There Be Carnage, okay.
It's just bad.
It doesn't roll off the tongue. It feels like trying to be clever, but not quite landing, which kind of describes a lot of things about the first film. It's just for me, some people like, am I excited for this movie? I just have so many reservations when it's like a movie that the first one, the script I thought was the weakest part, and then they do a 2-year turnaround. So they don't have a lot of time to like really develop this script to perfection. And then now it's a 2.5-year turnaround, but the script is already done. So they couldn't, that would be my concern. Didn't really have time to fix that. I love Andy Serkis. I want him to knock this out of the park, both because I would love a good movie and because I want him to succeed in things. But, you know, he doesn't have a track record as a director that makes it super easy to just go, oh, of course I can trust him with things like this. And then you look at the title and you go, okay. it's tough for me to get my excitement level particularly high on this one. How about you?
Yeah, I like Venom, the first Venom, probably more than most people. And I acknowledge that is one of the dumbest movies I've ever seen. Like it is, it is so dumb, but there's like a hint of like cheekiness to it where like there are moments when you're like, oh no, this movie's a little bit more clever than it's letting on. And I will still maintain, and I still maintain that, but like, I don't know. The whole script has to be, all I want is for it to at least be better than the previous one. That's all they have to do, which I know the bar is very low. And I'm hoping with Andy Serkis coming on and Tom Hardy being having a big hand in it, and then, you know, having Woody Harrelson be this ridiculous character, that it's, you know, they're going to have fun with it, but it's not going to be like bottom of the barrel trash. Yeah. And so like, I think at the very least it will be an upgrade from the first film. I just really hope that the studio learned the right lessons from Venom. I don't know if that's necessarily the case, but
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
Even some of the clunkiness of the script of the last one, I think even went to, they're trying to set up a Spider-Man-less Venom universe.
Yeah.
And so then the normal natural way to work into the story's not there. So then they're trying to find a way to set up the characters, and it just took so long. And once you had Eddie and Venom together, it was fun. It was goofy fun. And it worked. But that first 40 minutes for me was like, man, we are hitting in a lot of directions. Why is this taking so long? And they don't have to do that this time. They just have it set up. So now we just have to, how do we let there be Carnage and let him out?
Yeah,
I think it sets it up a little bit cleaner.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, and like, there have been so many people on the internet who have sort of said this, the name of the movie should have just been like Venom Maximum Carnage. Yeah. Like, just simple. Yeah, I mean, Maximum
classic,
Carnage is the name.
Story, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the name of like a comic arc already. So it's like you can get people excited, like, oh, are they going to take elements from this or not? And then it also rolls off the tongue way easier. It just, Let There Be Carnage feels like a studio exec move over at Sony. They're like, oh, let's be cheeky with this one. Let There Be Carnage, because Carnage is the villain and they're going to fight. And the title, it makes sense. Yeah. Get it, people? Like, I don't know. So dumb.
So Tom says, if Carnage is done right in this, this should turn out to be on fire. I think that's probably where a lot of people land, is like, if they can do this right, everybody wants not to be like Deadpool, but another like intense, kind of self-aware comic book franchise that's mm-hmm. not aimed for my kids. You know, it's not Disney. That's what I think everybody wants. Yeah. And you throw Carnage in the mix, and that just only moves in that direction. So I think everybody get excited about that. I had a super chat from Random Movie Reviews. He said, please do your 10 favorite movie trailers as a ranking. At some point in time, I'm sure I'll do that. I'd have to really think about it, because movie trailers are tricky ones, because you forget about them after you see the movie a lot of the times. And the experience mm-hmm. of the trailer is very different after you've seen the film. Ones that seemed awesome during the lead up can change really quickly. As soon as you see the movie, and you go, oh, that wasn't so cool after all.
Yeah. I mean, that's true. I just to give an answer for that one, I'd say my favorite trailer of all time is the third trailer for Man of Steel. The one where Zimmer's score is actually playing in the background. That trailer is a work of art. Yeah. It's just spectacular.
Yeah. That one, you know, just between the Zack Snyder imagery, and then you get just a little bit of Superman punching people in the face, glimpses of hope, of course, the score, and you're like, is this the real score? Mm-hmm. Like, is this where we're really going with this thing? Dark Knight Rises, I thought was really good. Mm-hmm. Great ones. And The Phantom Menace is kind of a legendary trailer of getting people, just doing its job of getting people amped for more Star Wars.
Yeah.
Next one on here, Scoob is heading straight to VOD at its original Woo-hoo. Release date in May. So VOD, Video On Demand, same thing that they did with Trolls World Tour, is that they're, instead of going to the theaters, instead of delaying, they're saying, hey, let's drop this one at home. I'm sure it'll be $20 to check it out. And mm-hmm. that's, I think this is confirmation that whatever went on with Trolls World Tour, that studios are paying attention. They went, that made money. That's what we're doing. We are definitely moving in this direction. And not terribly surprising that there's a lot of a one-to-one comparison, similar audiences, similar probably viewing behaviors between Trolls, Scoob. And they went, that worked for Trolls. Let's do it for us too. And likewise, that could mean some sort of change in the industry moving forward. Do you have any strong thoughts on this? We've talked about it before a little bit. We predicted this a bit.
Yeah, I've ever since they took it off the slate, I've been saying, yeah, they're going to drop this on like VOD or something like that. So for people who are interested in checking it out, it is $20 to rent, but then you can actually pay $25 and own the movie. So like when it comes out on May 15th, or I believe it's May 15th, it will be available for like families to purchase and own right then and there, which is the smart thing that Trolls didn't do.
Yeah. That's why I really didn't do it.
Universal didn't do.
That's the reason that I did not do it. I was like, I'm not going to pay $20 to watch a movie once, and then if I like it, have to buy it again in 2 months. And so the idea of like having it rent a little bit cheaper, pay a little bit more, like that's exactly what I think that they should do. And it makes it, Scooby-Doo, I was like, oh yeah, I'll check that one out for $20.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then as soon as it's like pay $5 more and you own it, it was like easy choice.
Yeah, for sure. No, I think that's a really, really smart move. And I think they're going to, I wouldn't be surprised if Scoob did better than Trolls World Tour, just because I think it appeals to a wider audience. Also, the film just looks far better. Yeah. So, I'm actually really excited for this. I thought the film looks cute. It looks like a wacky adventure, sort of like cool getting the origins of Scooby-Doo and stuff like that, with other like Hanna-Barbera like characters coming up in there. And the animation looks beautiful. So I'm really excited for it. And I'm happy the film is going to get a proper release on VOD and not just, dropped onto HBO Max, where, you know, people like have to subscribe in order to see it and whatnot. And like, they're going to be like, no, you guys can just, you can own it. You can just take this one for $25. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
And to some of what you said in there, I think Scoob has much broader appeal than Trolls. And some of that's just personal bias of, I wasn't crazy about the first Trolls film. And so then I wasn't very excited about this one. But Scooby-Doo, this is a 50-year-old franchise that you have multiple generations factoring into this deal. And mm-hmm. I think that matters. I think that really does matter in getting like me excited for it. Like I have a degree to which I'm like, hey, a new Scooby-Doo film. I'd like to see mm-hmm. that a little bit. I'd like to check that out. And then I have kids that they're the target audience. I mean, they watched two nights ago, the Scooby-Doo and Batman Brave and the Bold movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're still
it's fun.
Checking all this stuff out. And so they're right in the middle of all of it. And I think that just makes it much easier. And then, like as we've said, the trailers for it just look better. They look like much better trailers than Trolls 2. Like, nothing about the Trolls 2 is like, okay, we've got music. Okay. I don't care so much. But I watched the Scoop trailer, and I wish they weren't doing aliens. But besides that, I like the tone. I like the look. The humor made me laugh. And me not wanting them to do aliens, that's just personal preference. That's, you know, when I watch the movie, it's, you know, I'll judge it on its own merits. I'm just, you know, classic right. Scooby-Doo is, you know, let's go to a theme park and you rip the mask off a ghost and it turns out that it's the groundkeepers. Like aliens, that version of Scooby-Doo came after my time. But that's just, you know, I'm not the target audience. That is that, I'm not worried about that. But
yeah, the other thing is, like, we don't actually know if they're going to be aliens, because, like, maybe it's just going to be a whole bunch of other, like, Hanna-Barbera characters, because that seems to be where, like, the I guess the intergalactic stuff is coming from, is like it's like Blue Falcon and some of those characters. So like it could have like a fun little, like, you know, mask reveal and stuff in there. But yeah.
Just looking in the chat section, Trav Max Fun says, I'm really excited for Scoob, Red Panda. I grew up watching Scooby-Doo. Exactly. I think mm-hmm. that's the one mm-hmm. that if with how well Trolls appears to have done, Scoob, that one could be very interesting to see what these numbers are. Because it just feels so much better marketing, bit broader audience. And I think just using myself as an example, you thinking about even my sister, what my sister would do, she's not gonna Trolls 2, but Scooby-Doo. Oh yeah. I'd definitely like to check that out. So I think it's going to do really well. Had a few super chats come in. One from Majestic Demon. Venom to me is the best Taco Bell movie ever made. And I almost said that based off kind of what you were saying in there, Griffin. Taco Bell movie, if you guys don't know, that's language that I use to refer to movies that I view as kind of cinematic fast food. They're easy to digest. They're enjoyable. But at their core, this isn't fine dining. They're like, you know, they're cooking with a lot of sugar, butter, and grease to make it enjoyable. And so they're movies that, you know, on a certain level are indefensible, and you understand why certain people hate them, but that doesn't change the fact that you just eat it up. I eat my Taco Bell all the time, even though my tacos are always soggy. So Griffin, like all the language you used to describe it, I was like, I almost interjected like a Taco Bell movie. So Majestic did that for me.
Yeah.
And we had another super chat on Venom from Kevin Hernandez saying, Venom 2 is being pushed to next year, also is The Batman. Yes, The Batman was delayed. It wasn't delayed by a year, but it was delayed by several months. And as we talked about in our discussion, Griffin speculated that might be one of the reasons Venom moved to that spot, because Batman cleared out. And we'll get to that. That's in a couple of our different subjects. But Batman moved as well. Mm-hmm. And one more super chat in here from Just Some Porgs with Internet Access. I didn't even know that they had fingers to be able to type on a computer, but
that's kind of amazing.
What's your opinion on the character Ahsoka Tano? So I've kind of like, I have technically watched all of Clone Wars. I haven't watched Clone Wars though. And I'm slowly making my way back through it. And I'm watching the current season with a lot more attention than I previously watched the main body of the show. And so I think there's a lot of interesting things that they've done with the character. And I think when they started making her more mature and not just kind of Anakin's whiny Padawan, she got a lot more interesting. And then she showed up on Rebels. And once again, it's like they did stuff that was fun with her. The season 7 stuff, I think, is using her to explore stuff in the world of Star Wars that we haven't seen before. And so as soon as they said that she's going to be on Mandalorian season 2, Rosario Dawson, I am so excited to see that. And some of it's also, once again, having a daughter and just having her a character that she can get excited about, that, you know, my son gets excited about all kinds of characters, and, you know, she loves Spider-Gwen and Ahsoka Tano. So hopefully she can get as pumped about The Mandalorian as my son. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, Ahsoka has really become one of my favorite characters in just all of Star Wars. Yeah, I mean, there was a bit of adjustment period when she was first introduced on the show, but I also think it was intentional because you got to think she's a kid, yeah, right? And so like she's placed in these situations, and so like a kid in these situations is going to be kind of annoying and headstrong, especially when your master is also equally as annoying and headstrong. So like it makes sense, and like seeing her just grow throughout the course of the show, I thought was beautiful. And now like in the final season and everything, it's like she is just an amazingly written character. And I'm so happy we're going to get more of her in The Mandalorian, yeah, and so forth. It'll be cool to see that.
And those are fun characters for me, when you have that person that was in this world and then they left it and they come back, mm-hmm, in this other fashion. I think that's really cool. And in, yeah, her case, we're going to see her as someone that observed all the events of the original trilogy and then came, yeah, back and wasn't a part of that really. We didn't see her a part of that. So I think that's pretty cool. Okay, Ryan O'Toole, yeah, left a comment for us. He says, is Sean going for the old man Logan look? Maybe.
He says, is.
What's up, boys? Not much. Just talking movies. If you guys don't know, Ryan O'Toole is a fellow YouTuber. He's got a channel. He's got a podcast. Good friend of us that I've known him since I started my YouTube channel. Hey, Ryan. All right. Next subject at hand. Comic-Con 2020 canceled. Comic-Con 2020 has officially been canceled. Not delayed. Not pushed back. Fully canceled. And I think, you know, we kind of knew some big announcement of it not happening in its normal fashion was coming. Fully canceled, mm-hmm, feels a bit like not that surprising, really, in light of how bad we're realizing all of this stuff is with the virus. But still feels shocking no matter what to have that big, mm-hmm, of a bomb being dropped that it's out. It feels shocking that that's happening. But at the end of the day, yeah, you think of the things most likely to cause a resurgence of all of this that would lead to a second lockdown, taking 150,000 nerds and cramming them into one convention center.
Not a good idea.
Hall H, yeah, in San Diego, and then sending them back out to the rest of the world. I mean, that's exactly the sort of stuff that seems extraordinarily likely to cause damage, cause problems. So of things that to cancel or dramatically rethink for the year 2020, it seems pretty obvious that that's something that probably needed to go. And hopefully they can find some way to do something that can cause some level of excitement. Like I've never been able to go to San Diego Comic-Con. But, you know, I was sitting there in my living room during the Marvel panel live tweeting the whole thing. And just like, mm-hmm, the whole thing, retweeting, leave little comments. I mean, it was an event for me just watching Twitter as it happened. Like literally, mm-hmm, watching, mm-hmm, Twitter as it happened and people just snapping pictures of what was happening in the room. And I hope they can find some way to capture some of that because it's – I don't want to fully lose that, but at the same time, yeah, I mean, this is not the year to bring the whole world together in one place.
Yeah, no, it was never going to happen. Like that's just, and especially in July. Yeah. Good luck with that. You don't try and escalate things when things are just starting to get better. So like, it just, I don't think any big social gatherings like that are going to be happening for the rest of the year. So, yeah, no, not surprising. It is disappointing. I think Comic-Con is a lot of fun. I enjoy going the one time I've went, and it was just, you know, you meet some cool people, you see some cool stuff, some great food and like cool parties and whatnot. So it's just, I look at Comic-Con as just like a giant party in a lot of ways. Like it's just, if you've never gone, like I highly like suggest that at anyone like go and have fun during it. You know, you don't have to be like a journalist or whatever to get into panels. You can just wait in line, or you can like, I think some of my favorite things are just like walking the floor, you know, just like going up to the booths and like buying some like cool prints or posters and like seeing the costumes. So yeah, it's going to suck. But I think something that could happen is like, you know, you can see Marvel do like a digital panel online or something like that, which I've seen that idea floated around. I think it would be possible. I don't know if it would 100% happen, just because I don't know if they really need to tease anything, but you know, maybe like a little first look at the Eternals or something. So I don't know. It sucks, but yeah, not totally unexpected.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, just even like, you think a lot of the stuff that they announced last year wasn't necessarily nearly as flashy or as exciting as maybe it could have been, because it was, it's such an experimental phase. But you know, a year later, all these shows more developed, all the new Disney Plus shows, there's a bunch of different trailers, things, footage that they could show to get people pumped. I'm sure they'll have some casting announcements. That having that annual time where we come together and they announce stuff, just that rhythm of part of nerd culture, it just feels like a big loss if we don't have that. Neapolitan at a super chat said, if you could go back in time and watch any movie when it first came at theaters again, what would it be? I would choose Endgame. So of ones that I saw in the theater, ones that I actually saw in the theater, I think Endgame is a pretty obvious front runner. To see that opening night with a packed, pumped theater, that was something special that you'll never recapture what happened in those theaters when Captain America has that hammer in his hand. That's when the portals start opening.
It's just a special moment.
And so for ones, however, that I wasn't there for, and you weren't there for, you think, what to actually experience, no, I am your father in the theater, Empire Strikes Back. I mean, I have no clue what that experience being in the theater was, because, you know, I just always kind of had that information. I always kind of grew up with it, or saw it on home video with my parents or something like that. It's not the same thing. Do you have any other ones that would come to mind for you?
I mean, I think it would have been really exciting to see Jaws in the theater, you know, especially living in a time that isn't like oversaturated with just like different kinds of media. Like in the 70s, you watch a film like Jaws and like that, you know, you don't have like a bunch of memes on the internet kind of like ruining it for you. It's just like you see that movie, you're terrified, and now you literally will not go to the beach anymore. And so it's like seeing some of those films would have been like interesting. I mean, obviously, the Return of the King, but I guess Return of the King, like, you know, the Lord of the Rings films, I didn't see those in theaters. So like, that would have been really fun to like experience some of those moments, in theaters. I mean, those are really the only ones that come to mind. I can't really think of anything else, but.
All right. Quick comment in the comment section. Billy Bob Joe asks, what happened to the guest appearances? Nothing. I just haven't had any. I've been experimenting with live streaming. I've sent some emails out to some people. I have been working on it. It's not entirely, the reason I haven't had any guests the last few weeks is just because I wanted to figure out live streaming, and it seems to be working, seems to have gone well, hence why I can even answer your question. And I've messaged some people. It just hasn't come together yet. So I'll even if I just have someone on that we had before, I'll do my best to have someone on next week and maybe experiment with a 3-person live panel next week, if my computer can process that much stuff live happening on camera. So anyway, next subject at hand, DC movies, DCEU has shuffled all of their release dates. They are now officially kind of moving it all around. So I'll kind of go through these real quick. Wonder Woman is now August 14th of this year. The Suicide Squad is August 6th, 2021. The Batman is October 1st, 2021. Black Adam is listed for December 22nd, 2021, and The Flash, June 3rd, 2022, which we'll get to that one. That's interesting in light of the news from a couple weeks ago. And then Shazam 2, November 4th of 2022, and Aquaman 2, December 16th, 2022. So as we've already said in this particular live stream, as well as previous ones, you know, I'm not surprised by these massive reshuffles. This is what I've been expecting. So it's no real surprises here. The one that was most interesting in all of this, because most of it's like, I just don't really care. It's, I just expected. The Flash moved up a month. The Flash was supposed to be in July, and they moved it to June 3rd. And so 2 weeks after, weird incident with Ezra Miller, puts his hands around a girl's throat that he doesn't know, puts her on the ground, and there wasn't a follow-up from him or anything that clarified it. Like, no, it was a misunderstanding. It was a joke gone wrong. Like, there's nothing like that. And so it's just sitting out there as, did he just assault someone? And then we're just like,
What the heck? Like, how does that just get swept under the rug? Yeah. Like, that blows my mind.
And so then follow that up with then that the movie moves up. And I had some, like, I tweeted out with the headline. I said, so I guess Ezra still has the job? And a bunch of people responded to me kind of like, well, why wouldn't he have the job? Or it's easy to replace a lead actor, or, you know, at any point in time, you can just cast someone new. So why wouldn't they announce the date? I mean, they're just announcing it. I was like, well, you don't normally move your release date forward if you don't have a plan in place. Like, mm-hmm. you move your date forward if everything is ahead of schedule. And if you're like, hey, man, I know you've had this part for 5 years, but you're crazy. You're fired.
You're kind of a terrible person.
You're a bad person. Then you don't move your date forward if you're still trying to figure that stuff out, especially with everything moving around. You don't make the date locked in until you have locked in your lead actor. And, you know, people are like, well, we don't have all the information and we shouldn't jump to conclusions. Like, right. I mean, I'm tracking with you. I don't like to jump to conclusions. But when something like that happens and he doesn't say, hey, it was a misunderstanding, or he doesn't like, here she is, I apologized, we're cool, when there's nothing, that's a problem. Because, mm-hmm. you know, somebody even, you know, tweeted at me like, well, you know, how do you know it wasn't just his friend? Like, sure, I mean, it could have been. But if it was, around the time that there was 1,000 articles about how he's a bad person, he would be like, hey, it's just my friend, we're right here. See, we're good. It was a joke gone wrong. Like, you just can put that fire out really easy if it's a fire that's easy to put out. However, mm-hmm. if the situation is that some rowdy fans were not respecting his space and he responded by like putting his hands on her throat jokingly, but he actually did it and then takes her to the ground, there's not an easy way to explain why the star did that. Like, not that he hurt her, but you can't do that. That's not like, you're not allowed to do things like that. And so,
yeah, no, it doesn't matter like what kind of context it's in. It just doesn't like look bad. And especially when like the reports like come out, or sorry, it doesn't look good. Yeah. Sorry. Especially when the reports come out, and they're like, no, this was not like a friend. This was someone who was clearly assaulted by him. The guy sucks. He's just a big old, he's got some serious issues that he needs to clearly take care of. I can't see him staying on. I've always said I can never see him staying on this project. And until the movie actually gets released with Ezra Miller as the Flash, I don't think that he will be the Flash. So right. And this just makes me think that even more. So I don't know.
Well, and one of the things we talked about a couple weeks back was that it's not like he's the big star power here. I mean, he had a couple of these little cameos in a couple things and then Justice League. But you know, it's not, you know, that movie wasn't well received. It's not coming off Avengers and being like, now we're going to recast whoever, Hawkeye or whatever, Black Widow. Mm-hmm. It's not that. It's coming off a movie that was not well received. There were criticisms of a lot of criticisms that are pretty valid of the way they treated the character. Some people liked his sense of humor, but like I went to a Comic Con here in Austin that John Wesley Shipp was at. John Wesley Shipp played the Flash on the Flash TV show in 1990. Mark Hamill was on mm-hmm. the show. Danny Elfman composed the music for it. So that's the, like, I saw that opening day, or not in the, it wasn't theatrical. When it debuted on TV, like, I watched it. I actually pulled out my, I was like, Dad, I need to record this. He goes, here, record it on this. It was actually a copy of my mom's, copy of Flash Dance. Yeah, she recorded on TV. And so I recorded over Flash Dance with the Flash. And so that's the 1991. So the star of that, John Wesley Shipp. So he was the original live action Flash. And you know, he's been doing the Comic-Con thing this all along. He's on the new Flash series. Very good with fans. And did a panel on it. And people, someone asked, hey, what did you think about Justice League? And he's like, you know, Ezra Miller, I think he did the best that he could with the material and did some funny stuff. And it's amazing what they can do with special effects. But in that movie, every opportunity they could, they played the Flash for a joke instead of as a hero. Mm-hmm. And so then he's afraid to fight people. So he's like, I just push people out of the way. And then, you know, he trips and falls on Wonder Woman's boobs. And then in the finale.
Some weird just, yeah.
And it just like these jokes that it's like, you know, we've tried to move past doing jokes like that. And then in the finale, you know, he's like, what can I even do? I don't even know what to do. And they're like, just run that way and save some people. And he does the one thing they ask him to do. And then immediately they cut to, oh, you saved three people. Superman saved a full building. And so even when they use this version of the Flash, they undermined him throughout their stuff. And that's, like I said, that wasn't just my take. That's the take of John Wesley Shipp publicly stating, come on, guys, why would you do that to the Flash? If you finally put him in the movie in the lead and you played him for jokes. And so it's not like there's any reason to be particularly tied to him either, I don't think.
No, not at all. I actually hated his portrayal, first of all. I've never been I've never liked this casting. I've always thought it was the weirdest thing ever. And like the movie did not give me cause to believe that it was a good choice. And then on top of literally everything else about him just not being a good person and then just like fucking choking people, it get someone else. There are plenty of people who can play the Flash. In fact, there are probably a million unknowns that could do it probably better than Ezra Miller. So
we got a couple super chats come in. Max Shapiro says, the worst thing your favorite actor has ever done. Worst thing my favorite actor has ever done. I normally say my favorite actor is Sylvester Stallone. So I don't know if you're saying for worst action that they did. Or if you're talking about worst movie. So worst movie did Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. And apparently some of that where that came about was because they were trying to get Schwarzenegger to do it. Schwarzenegger didn't want to do it. And so then he basically baited Stallone by telling him he was thinking about doing it and whether he should or shouldn't, and tricked Stallone into doing Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, which ironic as a very offshoot on that, the guy that wrote this famous screenwriting book called Save the Cat, that people talk about in screenwriting worlds. And the guy in the book talks about, I have sold a bunch of scripts. One of the two that he sold two that were produced in actual movies. One of them was Blank Check and the other one was Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. And this is the guru that was like super famous screenwriter guy. Anyway, if you're talking about things that he did that are in the more literal sense, I mean, the guy's been on steroids for 40 years and kind of lying about it. And, you know, hey, you can't look the way that he looks in his 70s if you don't spend an enormous amount of time in the gym. Like, he's done the work. I'm not know it did not work.
Yeah.
But like in his book, do I even have it right here? I don't have it right here around me. But in his book, like he talks about when he was training for Rambo 3, where he's like probably him in his peak, just like no body fat and just the thickest muscles, like the best ratio of muscle to no body fat. And he literally wrote in his book, well, I was on this amino acid that's 8 times as powerful as normal amino acids. And, you know, I was taking that. And I was like, no, you weren't. That doesn't exist. Like you just lied about being on an amino acid. What's the name of it? Why won't you name this amino acid? Can I take 8 of these pills? And like, that's not a thing that exists. And if it did exist, everyone would know what it was. Like, if it got the results of 8 times the normal amino acid, it would have the consequences. Thus, it would also still be a banned substance because it would have the consequences of the banned substance. So,
yeah,
like everybody knows he's been on steroids and HGH, you know, for decades, and you know he's never fully been honest about what exactly is going on. Because, like, you get like Schwarzenegger said, "Oh yeah, like we did steroids back in the 70s; they weren't banned." Like you said that, like it's not a secret. Stallone, however, I think because he's got little guy syndrome, because Schwarzenegger outweighs him by, you know, 50, 60, 70 pounds. Schwarzenegger is a legitimate, actual, massive person. And Stallone is a little guy in great shape. Like, he's not a big guy at all.
No.
I mean, like 5'9", but really muscular. And like in Rocky 3 and stuff like that, he's like 160 pounds. Like, not a big guy. So I think, yeah, you know, a little bit of little guy syndrome going on in there. So anyway, I don't know if that's where the question was going. How about you? Do you have one that's worst thing that your favorite actor has ever done?
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking in the literal sense, he's not my favorite actor, but I used to be a big Kevin Spacey fan.
Most all of us were, and
that ended promptly after the info about him came out.
And his response to it.
God.
Like, everything that he's done since kind of being outed as not a good guy. like literally, the guy from Star Trek Discovery puts this interview and he's like, yeah, he assaulted me when I was underage. And Kevin Spacey's like, yes, I am gay. Wrong time, buddy. Everything about that response right there is like, what are you doing? And then he puts out like these creepy videos as his character from House of Cards. Like,
what are you doing? It's so weird. But I mean, like, other than that, I mean, like, Leonardo DiCaprio is probably my favorite actor. It's not like he's done anything bad, but he's like dating a girl that's like younger than me. And right. He's like pushing 50, I guess, no, you could say. So it's just, that's a little weird.
That stuff does not sit well in the post Me Too world where it's like, wait a minute. The whole movie stars, rock stars going after college age girls and stuff like that. Immediately you're like, you can't just excuse this because they're pretty. Like that's exactly what part of why this is really unsettling.
Yeah, for sure. And like, I feel like there are cases where like it's not the end of like, it's not a big deal. Like, I think the Florence Pugh and like Zach Braff one, a lot of people like get irritated about that, but like she's old enough to make her own decisions. She knows what she's doing and whatnot.
And it's that kind of almost the fame dynamic too. Right now, she is kind of more famous than he is. Like, long term, he has a much longer legacy. Yeah. But when it comes to like the ups and downs of fame, like she's like riding really high on this wave of fame. And that is like a really important dynamic when it's like, are you just banging a groupie or are these two adults? And, you know, it like my first reaction to him dating her, like I definitely immediately go, that's pretty young. But also when you're in the world of movie star fame, that's a different world. And two movie stars dating each other is not the same thing as 45-year-old man dating random girl that just got out of college. Those are not the same thing. They're not in the same world. And there's a lot of reasons that one of those is like, ooh, movie stars are kind of gross. And the other one is like, hey, okay, you know. Oh, yeah, like my wife's best friend, maid of honor at our wedding, her husband's 20 years older than him. And, you know, she's a couple years younger than me and they've been married for about 5 years. So when they first started dating, she was in her 20s and he was about 50. And immediately it was like, okay, this is kind of weird. And she's like, they knew that too. Normal people know, like, yeah, that's a pretty big age difference. And like he'd been married before and had kids that were literally just a few years younger than her. And that's obviously kind of weird. It's different.
If
you know it's weird, then it's cool. Anyway, we're talking about relationships a little bit too long here.
Someone did put in there, they were like, I wonder what the worst thing Robin Williams did. And I was just like, oh, well, do we want to go down that rabbit hole?
let's not go down to that one. Real quick, talk about this one. Justice League Dark deal has been signed for Bad Robot. And was it for HBO? The HBO Max? Was it for?
Yeah, HBO Max, yeah.
And so it's being reported as J.J. Abrams is developing, I believe it's Bad Robot.
It is Bad Robot developing. I don't think J.J. Abrams is like directly involved. Exactly. I think he's just producing.
And that's a thing, big thing to know about. A lot of times, J.J. Abrams is a more famous brand than Bad Robot. Though Bad Robot is a very famous brand too. But everybody knows J.J. Abrams because obviously Star Trek, Star Wars, and an enormous amount of very successful television. And so his production company is Bad Robot. And so when a lot of times when they're trying to get excitement for a Bad Robot new project, they say J.J. Abrams is developing this because he's listed as an executive producer on all of these. And he's given a lot of he's given way more credit and blame on Bad Robot Productions than he deserves. And so people are like, he didn't know how to end Lost. I mean, he had very little to do with Lost after like the beginning. Like he launched it and directed like the pilot, I believe. And then Damon Lindelof, all those other guys kind of ran with it. Like he's just the guy that runs a production company and he's giving advice to these shows. So this is not do not take this announcement that J.J. Abrams is directing, writing Justice League Dark for HBO Max. That's not what this means. Yeah. It does mean it's Bad Robot, and Bad Robot has a very specific vibe to them. They have a brand. And I love their brand. So much their TV, I have a massive fan of. But to be clear, it's more Bad Robot, I'm pretty sure, than J.J. Abrams. How about you? Your immediate thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I just find it funny how he makes The Rise of Skywalker and then continues to fail upwards. But, you know, that's a conversation for a later time. I don't hate the idea of Bad Robot doing Justice League Dark. I don't want J.J. Abrams to be anywhere near it creatively, personally. I think there are other voices that are far more interesting to tackle that material. What could be good is if they got like the guy who did Overlord or some of the people involved in the Cloverfield films to you know, get involved with Justice League Dark. I think that could be really interesting. I am disappointed we're not going to see like Guillermo del Toro's vision. I just was that was like a match made in heaven, and it gets me that would have gotten me really excited. But it'll just be cool to see Justice League Dark in general. Do you think they'll keep Matt Ryan as Constantine?
I wouldn't think so. I can't see them wanting to tie over to Arrowverse. I can't fathom what benefit would be to them to tie themselves to that continuity. So I would think that they'd want their full control. And even kind of elaborating kind of what you said up, got the impression you might not be the biggest JJ fan right now. But if you look at the other talent that Bad Robot has consistently attracted and been a part of their stuff, the original Cloverfield, Matt Reeves, Person of Interest, Jonathan Nolan, and is Westworld under Bad Robot?
Yeah, Westworld is under Bad Robot, yeah.
And you can kind of go through their history. And, you know, Damon Lindelof did, you know, for a long time, the internet hated him. But then he did Watchmen last year, and they like him more. But, like, they get some very interesting auteur creative people that have a vision, and they get to do interesting stuff with it. As you know, if they're on CBS, they're limited a little bit. But if you're on HBO, they let you go pretty crazy. So even if you are kind of cynical towards JJ, as I said, I don't think that JJ is going to be the guy that's doing a whole lot with it. They're just using his name because everybody knows his name more than Bad Robot. And they probably will get someone very interesting to have some fun with it. But I can't see this one being tied to Arrowverse and stuff like that. Cause I'm pretty burnt on Arrowverse.
For sure. I could see Matt Ryan, you know, making the transition over just because he made the transition from his show to the Arrowverse. I'm sure that he could leave the Arrowverse and like just go on to be in Justice League Dark and then, not have people, you know, think twice about it. He kind of has that attachment to the character that, I guess Charlie Cox does in a way, where it's like I could see them keeping Charlie Cox on and putting him in the MCU, but removing the baggage of the series. It would be weird, but like I feel like it could make sense. So I don't know. I really like Matt Ryan in the role.
And I haven't watched the TV show. I've seen Constantine's show,
not great,
and the other stuff. So you know, maybe I could see it a little bit better if I had that point of reference, but.
Yeah, yeah. I just want him to get a fair shake at the role, because the show was plagued by many issues, and it was also censored for network television, which is, why would you put Constantine on network television? So,
got a super chat question real quick. Neapolitan, Mr. Sean and Griffin, if you had to choose any franchise that either needs a reboot or desperately needs a good movie, that would what would you choose? So what would we like to continue, either with a reboot or, I guess, throw a sequel on that one? One we've been talking about is Rocketeer.
Oh, my God. Yeah, man. Yeah.
So if you guys don't know Rocketeer, it's a Joe Johnston film from the very early 90s. And it's based off a comic book. And so it has the vibe of kind of those throwback serial adventures like Indiana Jones. Joe Johnston came from Lucasfilm, and so it very much has that tone vibe. Great score from James Horner. Timothy Dalton is the villain, and it's on Disney Plus, and so I definitely recommend checking out. Like, that's one of those movies that I saw when it came out in theaters, and then went to Disney World that same summer and like got my picture with the guy in the costume and everything like that, and they had the stunt show. And so that's one that just seems like an obvious one that you could do more with, especially with modern technology. And it's an underviewed film. So whether you wanted to do some version of a remake, reboot, or anything with that, I think that's an obvious contender for one.
Yeah. I think, I almost think at this point you'd have to do a reboot, just because like all the people originally involved with it are too old.
Did you watch The Killing?
The show
with Joel Kinnaman?
No, I don't think I did.
So
no.
Bill Campbell, the Rocketeer, he's on it.
Yeah.
He looks.
Really?
He's very prominent. Like, he's one of the main cast on it. Cause you have the two investigator people, and that's Joel Kinnaman and the lady. And then you have kind of this politician plot line, and he's the politician. And that runs through the first two seasons. So he's very involved in it. As of when that show's on, like, he's looking great.
Considering, you know, really?
You know, maybe after 55, age caught up with him or something like that, but he's still looking good. But you know, even if you were to do that, it would be set like the Rocketeer 1960. I don't know if that makes any sense, but
yeah, it would be a little interesting. So I feel probably, like Alan Arkin. Yeah.
But yeah, all that to say, he actually is looking pretty good, but you know, a bunch of Alan Arkin, some of the other people, and Timothy Dalton. I don't want to spoil anything on that point, but Alan Arkin is in his 80s now.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it would be nice to see just Jennifer Connelly again literally anything.
Yeah. Jennifer Connelly, like, you forget, like, she's kind of the love interest in it, and she's 50 now, but she still looks fantastic. And then, Jan from The Office is in it singing as a lounge singer. There's so many little nice touches about The Rocketeer. Is there another one you would reboot? You have a quick one?
I wouldn't reboot it, but I say this every time I get the chance. I just want a sequel to Tron Legacy. You know, I just that I love that movie so much, and I think that it left the story off in a place where I just want to see it continued with Joseph Kosinski directing. So it's kind of funny though, because that's like also based off of this like weird, underappreciated, underseen 90s, you know, Disney. Well, it's not even 90s. I think it was 80s, right?
The original Tron is about 1980.
Yeah.
That's like 1980. Yeah. That's beginning of the 80s.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But different from The Rocketeer, but kind of like similar in how it's just like, it just kind of flew under the radar.
So moving along to our next subject here, this is going to be real quick. Lovebirds gets a release date on Netflix. So this was a movie supposed to come out in theaters, supposed to debut at South by Southwest, which we were going to be at, and then the whole world collapsed. And so then it got acquired by Netflix, and so we now have a release date for it in May. You know, probably not too much to comment on that. For me, I'm looking forward to it. I'm still on kind of a It seems like comedians, a new comedian comes out every few years, and then they put them in a bunch of different stuff. And, you know, whether you like them or not, they put a bunch of movies with them out really quickly. Kumail seems to be one of those guys that he's just showing up in a bunch of different stuff, in small roles and bigger roles, and having comic book movies jacked. And yeah. I'm totally on the Kumail Nanjiani kick. Like, you know, Men in Black last year, he was the best part of it. I really enjoyed Stuber. And so I was just excited for this one. And I think streaming is probably a better place for it, where it'll do better. Because people don't go out to the movies to watch films like that as much. So you put it on streaming, you go, oh, look, a comedy with Kumail Nanjiani. And I forget the girl's name, but I believe she was –
Issa Rae.
Yeah. And she was in Little last year, and I thought she was the best part of that movie. And so then putting them together just seemed like a lot of fun. So I saw the trailer. I was like, all right, I'm totally the audience for this movie. I have a date night with my wife. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. I think at the very least it'll just be, you know, fun. Just fun, light entertainment and whatnot. I really like Issa Rae's show Insecure on HBO. Yep. She's great in that. And then, yeah, I mean, Kumail he's one of the hottest talents right now, and for good reason. The guy has a lot to offer, and he's very versatile. And this looks like, you know, it's him doing what he does best with a great, you know, co-star. So I'm all for it. I think it could be a lot of fun.
So next thing we're going to talk about today is that there is a new Chris Hemsworth movie coming out this Friday on Netflix. It was written by one of the Russos. Both of the Russo brothers produced it, and then it's directed by kind of like a really famous stuntman, second unit director. I haven't seen the movie yet, but my understanding is that you have. If you could give us your 1 minute take on Extraction.
This movie is freaking amazing. It's so good. It's weirdly enough, I think this might end up being just like the summer surprise blockbuster of the season, just because there's literally nothing else coming out, and it's going to fill that void nicely. I don't think Chris Hemsworth has ever been better. He's doing a lot of physical work here, but then also he brings the emotions when he needs to, and he brings it in a way where it elevates, you know, pretty surface level stuff on the page. Mm-hmm. The action is unbelievable. You're going to see this comparison a lot, but it's like you take the gun-fu and the really like elaborately choreographed action from the John Wick series, and you combine it with the intensity and the ticking clock of like a Black Hawk Down, and you get Extraction. There is one sequence in the middle of this film. It's my jaw hit the floor just because, like, you think it's starting out as one thing, and then it transforms into something completely else, and then it goes into something completely else. And it's like, it's just an absolute display of like master craftsmanship. And so like Netflix needs to be doing more movies like this. These really like intense, compact, adrenaline filled action movies, that are like, they're quality films. They're like really well made. And it doesn't, you know, Netflix, obviously they don't need to keep doing action movies like this, but like they're definitely putting their money in good hands here, because you can see every cent of the budget fully realized. Sam Hargrave is, I want to see whatever this guy does next. He's going to be a force in the action department. You're going to love this, man. Like, if this is not your favorite film of the year by the time you watch it, then you're not. Your name isn't Sean Chandler, quite frankly. So,
I like the sound of that. All right, we had a couple super chats come in. I got nervous because people asked super chats, and I was like, oh, no, we're not on the internet anymore. So someone said, what would you say to a rebooted Smallville? I don't know what there is to add with Smallville. I don't know what, if you did it now, you get that you didn't get before. I mean, the special effects are dated on the original, but the stuff on Arrowverse is dated too, because on a TV budget, you can't do what you really want to do. So, you know, I think it needs more time, and I wouldn't necessarily want Smallville again. I would want some other interpretation of Superman. And it wouldn't be like, let's do Smallville again, where for 10 years we tell the origin story of Superman. That's not what I would choose to do. As much as I had fond memories of the show, that's not the direction I would go. And we had another one. Azim, the Dreamer Review, says, you want to see, or what do you want to see in Jurassic World Dominion? Okay, so on this question, last week you guys asked us, had we watched the Jurassic World Battle at Big Rock or whatever it's called. I watched it last night, and I really dug it. I don't remember. Had you said you seen it?
No, I hadn't. No, I
okay, so it. Basically it's a family out camping, and then two dinosaurs start fighting in front of them, and then one of them turns on the camper. And so it's just like a scene that you would see in a Jurassic Park movie, directed by Colin Trevorrow. And just pretty cool, and it gives it a little tease of the dinosaurs are out there, they don't have them contained yet, so what can we do? It's just get a little bit of that. And then what it does that's what's even more fun is that it ends by having basically a set of these found footage type videos of people doing normal things, and then a dinosaur like jumps in front of them. And so it's kind of like what you would see as news footage of like the dinosaurs are starting to show up. And so the dashboard cam footage of someone driving down, one of these windy roads in California, and then suddenly there's a stegosaurus right in front of them, and they have to like veer out of the way, and like wedding footage where they release doves, and then pterodactyls come in and grab them. And so that, I mean, as to the question, what do I want to see in the next Jurassic World? I probably that sort of thing of,
yeah, same. Yeah. Yeah.
Just what it would be like if these dinosaurs got out there and you're trying to both not make them go extinct, but you're also like, we can't go extinct. We can't let this get out of control. And so then this urgent story to try and stop the spread of these dinosaurs or something like that, or whatever that would look like. I think the normal life aspect, that not doing San Diego from The Lost World that just kind of comes off like a Godzilla movie, but actually dinosaurs got loose on the mainland. How do we respect them while not dying?
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
All right. And our final subject of the day, final official subject of the day, is Georgia is reopening, planning to reopen their movie theaters very soon. Like in the next couple, like May 1st or something, they want to reopen their movie theaters, which, I mean, there's the side to it that you just kind of go, that doesn't seem like a very wise decision. Just obviously,
no,
you probably shouldn't do that. But more importantly, what are they going to play? Where are they going with this?
I know. And it's like, it's not even their theaters. Like they're opening up like nail salons and like hair places and, other stuff like that. They're trying to phase in a sense of normalcy, and it's just too soon, quite frankly. I mean, I understand like states have like, plans in place, but like, this is just not okay by any stretch of the imagination. Like, it's just like, this is bad. It's going to affect a lot of people. And it shows that they don't know how to run a state, and they don't care about those who are going to be most affected by it. Because I mean, it goes, for me, it goes like beyond the movie theater thing. Like, you're right. What are they going to play? Like, it's just, there is literally no point. I guess they could play old movies, but like a state opening up theaters isn't going to, rejuvenate the cinematic market or whatever. It's irresponsible, and it clearly comes from a place of not taking this thing seriously. Or worse, it's, they don't want to shell out the money for unemployment. You can look at it that way. And all the people who are suffering from not having a job. So it's not good.
Yeah, it's a weird time we're in. And I think there's a side to it to where if you're in LA, and especially if you're in New York City, your perception on things is very different because you know people. If you're in New York City, you know people that have died. If you're in LA, you know a bunch of people that have contracted it. If you're in the main section of the country, you probably don't know anyone. And so it's all TV news. And it's stuff that you don't like factored in. And so you think, that's a big deal there, but it's not a big deal here. It's like, but that's because it hit there and everywhere shut down, and therefore it didn't. Like that, it's a lot more complicated than these kind of single variables. I don't know anyone that has this, therefore we're okay. Like,
it's selfish. Yeah.
And it's short-sighted. And so, there's a lot of things to factor into it. And I think anyone that's not, like, you have to be thinking long-term of the consequences to the economy. You have to think about that. But that's not the same thing as like, let's get this as quick as possible. Like, you really have to think about – it's a very complex situation that should not rush any direction. Anyway, so what close out on some recommendations. What have you been watching recently and that you would recommend people check out? What have you been watching while locked at home?
Well, go watch Extraction this Friday. That I think a lot of you are going to really enjoy that. It's awesome. But other than that, I've been rewatching the Spider-Man movies. We just finished the Raimi trilogy. Going to move into the Andrew Garfield films. I think the only one that really holds up out of those three is Spider-Man 2. The first one is just so dated. And it's like super silly. And Sam Raimi is just... You know, he's almost his style is too much in that film, whereas like in two, he kind of tones it back a little bit. And three is just a terrible movie. But yeah, no, I've been rewatching through those. So that's been a lot of fun. And I'm going to be starting on Defending Jacob, that Chris Evans series. Mm-hmm. I have screeners for that. So, yeah.
For me, I have been binging through the TV show Community. That's on Netflix now. So it dropped down there about 2 weeks ago, and I'm in the middle of season three now. And if you guys don't know, Community, sitcom about a community college that debuted a little over 10 years ago. And if you just heard the synopsis of it, you'd think, okay, just random sitcom. It's not like that at all. And if you even watched the first 12 episodes, you'd think it was one thing, but it's not that at all. And basically, the Russo brothers were the creator was Dan Harmon, and then it was the Russo brothers were the two people working with them. So they directed an enormous number of the episodes. Chris McKenna, who worked on the last two Spider-Man movies and a bunch of other stuff that you've almost certainly watched if you're subscribed to my channel. He was one of the main writers on it for a while there and producer, and so won some or was nominated for some Emmys for some of the scripts that he wrote because they're just so bonkers and crazy and they just went for it with this show. So that's what I've been watching through. And it's really, as you look at it, the number of how much talent that started on that show 10 years ago, not didn't start, but were on that show 10 years ago and weren't really A-list names and have gone on to do big, gigantic things since is pretty crazy. And basically, is the final important detail on it is that the Marvel Studios, Kevin Feige, watched a couple episodes from the end of season two where they did this two-part paintball episode thing, one of them based on a Western, one of them kind of like Star Wars. They watched that and they went, I want to meet with these guys to see if they could do a Marvel movie. And then it turned out that they went from doing this weird situational comedy about community college to The Winter Soldier. So there you have it. That's my recommendation. Check out Community. The first 12 episodes don't really capture what the show's about. So if you need to skip ahead to the paintball episode at the end of season one. You'd be like, wait, this is where this show's going? And it'll change your perspective on everything. Thank you guys so much for watching. If you're listening to the audio version, be sure to leave a rating, leave a review, help us out on that. And most of the time, I think we're going to be recording these live moving forward. So if you want to check them out live, Wednesdays right around lunchtime in Central Time is when we do this. And if you're watching the live stream right now, we're going to keep on going. Griffin, where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can find me over on the Film Speak channel. I'm putting up a bunch of content over there. You can find my review for Extraction over there. And then you can also find me on Twitter at Griff Schiller.
There you have it. There's today's show, at least the audio version of it. Thank you guys so much for listening and keep talking movies too much.